This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
Welcome to a Men in Blazers MLS season preview pod special. Oh, MLS kicks off its 21st season this Sunday. If it was a person, North America's league would only just be old enough to legally raise a Guinness to its lips or gamble on a Biloxi riverboat. But it's come such a long way in that short time, developing a vibrant fan culture, narrative and backstory to grow its footprint in the US and inexorably raise its global profile. On the eve of this season, there's so many storylines waiting to be answered. Can traditional powerhouse LA Galaxy stocking up with veterans like that Bruce Willis, Helen Mirren, Red franchise, ride their experience to deliver Steven Gerrard to the titled promised land? Can NYCFC's new manager, Arsenal legend Patrick Vieira, conjure a tactical balance to bring out the best of Frank Lampard, Andrea Pirlo and David Villa? Can their so quickly, quite needly, crosstown rivals, New York Red Bulls, resummon their collective spirit to own the city and indeed the nation? To prepare for the season, we took some time to think about three of the characters we're most interested in watching over the next 8 months and invite them onto the pod to talk about how they feel at season eve. Can New York City FC's Frank Lampard, a Chelsea legend, overcome a frustrating first season in MLS and begin to enforce his will on opponents as he did so many times in the Premier League before? How will young US international Jordan Morris cope with both the hype and weight of expectation as he kicks off his professional career in Seattle? And having won last season's title, can young Portland Timbers coach Caleb Porter intuitively develop the managerial skill sets necessary to defend a championship? We start right here in the crap part of Soho with Frank Lampard, who joined us to talk NYCFC, Patrick Vieira, Andrea Pirlo and Poku.
Our first guest on this MLS pod special, Rog, one of the most decorated footballers in the world. He's won the Champions League, three Premier League titles. He's Chelsea Football Club's all-time leading goal scorer. This Sunday, he begins his second season with NYCFC as they travel to Chicago to take on the Fire. We welcome to the pod the one and only Mr. Frank Lampard. Welcome, Frank.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Oh, Frank, what a joy it is for us to sit here at this table. Three English immigrants to America. Davo's like Scarface. Yeah. I'm a little more like Yentl. You're doing it in a different way, a footballing way. How's it been for you, though, watching this Premier League, the most competitive of the modern period, and for the first time, not to be able to influence it on the field?
It feels good, and I think the reason it feels good is when you know your time's up. I had a great career in England, in the Premier League, and we know how fantastic it is. And I've actually enjoyed being out of the pressure cooker that it is and watching it as a fan, enjoying the ups and downs and not feeling so pressured. And I've got my new life and challenge over here now. So it's been a spectacular year. I mean, it's incredible.
Do you watch it live over here? Do you text the players at halftime?
I don't text the players, but I'm in contact with a few still. So, yes, I will speak with particularly the Chelsea boys, John Terry in particular. But the coverage, as you know, we have here is fantastic, and I watch it all. I'm up early on Saturday mornings watching right through the afternoon, watching all the games I can.
You said your time's up, but I think you proved last season that your time wasn't up, that you were still very capable of playing at Premier League level.
Yeah, I'd like to think so. When I say my time's up, I made this call to come here, and I wanted to come here while I knew I could still... was up to the challenge to come here and do well. So I think in terms of the Premier League, I think mentally, I think I had 18, 19 years in the Premier League playing. I always had an idea that I wanted to try something different at some stage, and the opportunity to come and play in New York was too big for me. But I can look back with a lot of comfort. I don't feel like, oh, I really missed that. I really want to go back to it. I'm not. That was my past. And as I say, it's quite nice to be a watcher now and just watch it back.
We're going to talk to you about trying something different, your footballing life here in America. But first, I want to hear, how has life been for you here in New York City? When we last spoke, you talked with excitement about actually having the chance to live in this place after visiting it so many times. Your Instagram is full of images of you at Giants games, at the Met, at Hooters, Frank. What's been your perfect...
With my wife.
With your wife.
He just loves chicken wings. What's your perfect New York moment that you've experienced since moving here?
There's so many. I mean, from that conversation we had, I've been obviously a tourist when I'd been before, but I think for the first 3 weeks to a month of being here, it was the big city and the bright lights. It's quite overwhelming, and I think what I've really enjoyed is just feeling settling in and feeling at home here. I felt at home very quickly. I've tried to embrace it. I think I've spent a lot of years as a London boy playing for a London club, watching, you know, players come in from all over the world, and the ones that tended to do well embraced the culture and everywhere where they were living. So I've set out, and myself and Kristen have set out to really embrace it. So yeah, you've seen me at Giants games, the Rangers games, we've eaten, we walk a lot in the city. We feel very blessed that we can live in such a fantastic city, and we've loved every minute of it.
Yeah, the thing that blew me away when I first came to New York was just delivery. Yes. Getting food delivered. Yes. You can't get that in London.
Well, it's funny enough, back in England, we tend to make things difficult. That's half the way, that's what we do. I'm sure you'll know that. I think here there's a lot of convenience and deliveries to your door.
Oh, I love delivery.
Yeah.
How's living here changed your perception of America and Americans?
Well, it's enhanced it. I travelled here on holiday. I travelled here with work very many times, and I love America. I love the American people. I think they're very welcoming. The differences in the cultures, as I say, you embrace and you take them all in. I love the good mornings in them. Again, very English trait. We don't say good morning. We walk past people. We stay quiet in the lift.
Yeah.
Here, people say good morning, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh, you've been to the Giants game. You've been to watch the New York Rangers. Has any US sports franchise won over your emotions?
Well, both of those. I think I like the Yankees because we have a link with the club. I went to watch the Yankees last year as well. It's just such a huge brand. You know, everybody loves the Yankees worldwide, and I think I've taken to that. But the Giants were great. I mean, I was very fortunate to have a friend of mine at the club who knew somebody who got me on the field before the game. We got really well looked after, and I loved the atmosphere. I loved the skill level. I loved the speed of the game. So I really took to the Giants.
A lot of the Premier League players who come over here, when we talk to them, they say one of the joys of being here in America is you can be a normal citizen on the streets of the city after years spent in the Premier League fishbowl. Have you enjoyed that? Or have you discovered that you kind of miss the VIP opportunities and the spotlight after all, just a little bit?
I try and keep the VIP bit if I can.
Just a bit. Just a bit of VIP.
Yeah, you know, just for a restaurant reservation now and again. Yeah. I think you do enjoy it. I mean, the game's growing here, as you know. The game of soccer, the Premier League, the worldwide game is growing. So you do get recognised here and there. And it's great because people are very nice and appreciate, you know, your career and stuff like that. But yes, you do. I like the being able to walk down the street and not have it so much. At the same time, I feel I want the game to grow because I think the 10, 15 years ago, nobody would have known a soccer player walking down the street. Now you see it, and that's just testament to how the game's changed and how it's moved on. So I enjoy sometimes being stopped. It's nice. It shows that the game's moving in the right direction.
And then in terms of the game, what have been surprises for you in terms of the quality or the kind of football played in MLS? What were you prepared for? What were you not prepared for?
I think I was prepared for everything. I think travel, all the things that players normally throw up, we need to travel 5 hours on a plane. Okay, that's what it is. Deal with it. You know. So I was ready for that. The level is fantastic. I think there's a big thing in England where we think the Premier League is the best in the world and we kind of put down other leagues. But I think now, I think people need to realise that the MLS, in terms of the competitiveness of it and the quality and level of player out here, have improved, you know, year on year, and I think I've found the levels to be very high, and I like the fact that you go all over the country, whatever team you're playing against, you get a really tough game. You know, I think the Premier League's like that now, but for years the Premier League was six great teams, and the rest, you know, you kind of knew what the results would be week on week out. I think the MLS, as you saw with the team that won it last year, quite unfancied, was struggling earlier on in the season, and they go and win it, and that's great for us to watch and the entertainment value.
And Steven Gerrard admitted after the season, he said, it's a lot better than I initially thought. A lot of people talk about MLS, about the level, but for me, a lot of them are wrong. Until you come here and sample it yourself, you see how strong it is, how fit and professional the players are. How would you describe the quality of play you experience?
I'd echo Stephen's words. I think he's got it spot on. I mean, as I say, I think we were ready. Stephen said even maybe more so. But I played a lot of pre-seasons here against MLS All-Star teams. I knew the level of player. The national team are great here as well. And I would agree with that. I think the athleticism, but I think just to say that is almost like you don't want to give the compliment of the actual technical ability of the league. I think everything here is very good. It's closing the gap towards the Premier League and the top leagues in the world. And I found it very tough. And you have to be at your best. You can't think you can come here because I played in the Premier League, stroll around and I'll be okay. The minute you do that, then you're going to struggle because it's a very good league.
How does the travel affect you? The very regular travel. How does it affect your play?
Well, I think the long journeys from East to West Coast affect you. And the trick is to try and not let it affect you as much as you can, which means preparation, it means physio, it means stretching, it means getting a couple of days before and doing the right things to get yourself at the best level to play. It's not ideal to fly so long, but it's a level playing field. I've always hated excuses and I hate making excuses. I think your mindset has to be, we can overcome any of these excuses on the way, and then it's about who wins on the day.
MLS inaugural seasons are traditionally rough. NYCFC's 2015 campaign, no different. There were positives, fan culture, incredible culture grew up instantly around the team. Average attendance, 29,000, is remarkable. But the team earned just 13 of a possible 39 points from August 1st to the end of the season. Never truly seemed to find their balance. If you could do one thing different, Frank, about last season in MLS, if you had a do-over, what would you do differently?
Oof, that's a tough question. I think the first thing to say is you got it spot on there. I think there was a big success story, which was the club off the pitch and the growth of a new club. And then on the pitch, we didn't live up to what we had to and what we should do, I think, with the squad. I don't know differently. What I do know is that pre-season this year, we worked very, very hard for 6 weeks on organisation. And for me, I didn't realise all the problems with a new franchise. It's throwing in a lot of new players. It's things behind the scenes that are new for everybody. And I think now there are no excuses. We've worked very hard for 6 weeks on organisation in the team, knowing each other's jobs, being a team, having a spirit. Those are the things I think that will change us around this year.
And you're all there. You weren't all there in pre-season last year.
Again, and I think myself and Andrea came halfway through. I had injury problems. It was a difficult year already by that time. It's not just about me and him, far from it, but it's great to have everybody together at the start of the season, to have this last 6 weeks working together. As I say, it takes the excuses out of it, which is what we want. We want to do well this year.
How did you deal with that? Because you've had the most remarkable record in terms of being injury-free in your career.
Frustrating. And I think you're right. I've been very fortunate, so I can't complain about anything. But any player who gets injured will tell you how frustrated they are. I'm particularly bad. Ask my wife. I'm terrible at home. very ratty. But no, you just have to deal with it. There's not much you can do and do all the right things to try and get fit again. But no, we're there to play, and there's nothing worse than sitting out when you can't play.
You've been down in Sarasota, pre-season training, 6 weeks. This is your 20th season as a professional footballer. You're a 37-year-old bloke. Does it get harder and harder to push yourself through the pre-season regimen, physically, mentally?
It can do. I have my moments in my hotel room when I get out of bed and I'm a bit stiff in the morning and you're aching slightly from the work the day before and you've been doing it for 20 years. But I'm a very driven person, and I came here, I knew what I signed up for, and I know pre-season is an important part of getting yourself at a level to start the season and stay fit through the season. So we all have those little moments, but no, I'm very driven, I'm very keen. We're fortunate at the end of the day. Our job is to go down to Sarasota in the sunshine, train twice a day and get fit for a season.
I'm in.
It's not the end of the world.
Yeah, I'm in. We'll be there, without a doubt.
Talk about the ageing process as an elite footballer and the extent experience compensates for kind of the physical changes. How's your style of play in your mind changed over the past 3 years?
Well, it has to change. I think what's really changed on a personal level is preparation and in-between games. I think I can't train quite as much as I used to when you're younger. You know, your legs will train you harder and you don't feel the ill effects of it. On the pitch, you have to change. You hope that your experience in years makes you more wise. You can get into better positions. I'm fortunate that my game was never about natural speed. I think players who have natural speed and start to lose it can have problems. And you just have to embrace it. You have to understand that your game's changing. Players in the Premier League did it very well. Ryan Giggs did it fantastically. Paul Scholes. You kind of change your game slightly with experience, and sometimes it makes you an even better player.
Yeah, your runs into the box were always late, Frank. They're now just a little bit later.
But that still might work.
Yes, yeah, start a bit earlier.
Yeah,
go and
simple,
do it.
You know.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a second season, but you do have a new key change at NYCFC, a new coach, Patrick Vieira, ex-Arsenal, French midfield, World Cup winning maestro, a man you know well. As a player, you played him 18 times in the Premier League. And I know you know that you won just two of those games and lost 11. He's a rookie manager. I mean, he was a legend as a player. But the old ethos is great players do not always make great coaches. What can you tell us about what kind of a coach Patrick Vieira is going to be?
Well, as a player, he was a great player, as you said there, and I think he always had a better edge to him. He wanted to win, you know, and he played that way. So I like that. For starters, I think as a manager, he wants to win. He's going to do everything to try and help us be winners. What he has done, he's done his schooling as a coach. He did his work. He worked to get his coaching badges. He worked with the young players at Manchester City for a few years. So he hasn't taken it lightly. And even to come here and be our manager, he went out on a limb here. Some managers would have maybe waited longer in Europe, try and keep a job nearer to home. You know, he's took himself here. He's brought a great staff with him, four or five really young, positive coaches. And I have a really good feeling, I have to say. He knows the game. He has respect from the players because of what he's done in the game himself. But I think as a manager as well, he's really learning the ropes. I think he can be a top, top manager, and hopefully for us this year.
Is that the first time you've ever played under somebody you've played with? And again,
yes, yeah, it will be. And I keep, you know, when we've been in the hotel for the last 6 weeks, I see his big long legs, and it reminds me of when he used to flick the ball over my head when I was about 20 years of age and get it the other side.
Yeah, exactly.
So I've had to go through that again. But yeah, we used to have ding dongs when we used to play at Arsenal Chelsea. It was a bit of a game, so sometimes there was little tussles.
Yeah.
And it's nice, you know. It's a sign of the age that I'm playing against. You know, being managed by someone I played against.
Yeah, no.
But at the same time, he's a great player. He's a good man, and I look forward to working with him.
It's when you're managed by the children of the players.
Yeah.
I mean, looking at this season ahead, one of the big challenges for NYCFC, the big three players there, yourself, Andrea Pirlo, mm-hmm. David Villa. I mean, you're all wise, experienced heads. Mm-hmm. You didn't mesh fully mm-hmm. last season, but what kind of conversations have you had, the three of you, with Patrick, to discover a way in which the three of you can mesh tactically?
We've had conversations on the training ground and between ourselves. One thing I'll say about the three of us, we're very determined, you know, for not quite gelling last year in a short period of time. It wasn't for the want of trying, and certainly this year we've had that want of trying again in pre-season. We look at it as a team thing. We want individually to be at our best to help the team as a whole. So it's certainly not just us three. I think this year you will see a team more organised, I think generally as a group. Last year, we let games get away from us. We become very stretched. So I think if us three can be at our best, but more importantly, if as a team we can be organised and somewhere near our best, I really think we can have a good year.
Some very, very good younger players mm-hmm. on this team. The team getting younger yeah. as well. So how is it working with the younger players in the MLS? It's not something new to you. You've always been a tutor to the younger players for yeah. the last few years. How is it with these guys?
Really good. I have to say, one thing about the dressing room at NYCFC that I've found is there's a great work ethic and a great desire to be better, the young boys in particular. And that's one of the things I took on when I came here. I didn't want to just worry about myself, you know, and play as well as I can. That's one thing. The responsibility is also to help the people around you. So I've loved working with the young lads. Hopefully they're going to improve. And I think you'll see that with some really exciting young players this year with us.
I mean, I went to see NYCFC a bunch last season, and watching Poku, it's one of my guilty pleasures mm-hmm. in football. Can you talk about some of the young players that have caught your eye on the squad?
Well, Poku's an obvious one. I think he came from nowhere, and he's got this exciting talent. And when the ball comes to him, you don't know what's coming, but it generally, you know, it can bring things to the game. He can win you games off the cuff. So that's great. And I think he'll improve again, a great desire to be better. And I think as he, you know, has experience of playing in the MLS more, he'll be even better. Kyrie Shelton,
yeah.
Been training with the national US national team.
Fast.
Loads of speed, great ability on the ball. I think, again, wants to do really well. And I think someone like Patrick and his staff can get him, can work him, we can try and help him. And I think he has the real ability to be a top player as far as he wants to go, because he's got everything. Now it's just about him developing that.
I've got to put my cards on the table. Andrea Pirlo, your NYCFC teammate. What a beautiful human being.
Yeah.
I adore him and his unmade bed chic. One of my favourite lines ever written in a book, apart from yours, Frankie.
Yeah.
If I look in the mirror when I get up, I see a man of average ugliness, stubble, an unruly mane of hair, a squint nose, but I also see a man who's completely happy with a figure staring back at him.
Wow.
He's a poet. He's a poet.
Comfortable
warrior.
In his own skin.
Yeah. There's just the three of us listening, Frank. Can you tell us your best Pirlo story from your time with him?
Between the three?
Yeah, no one else listening.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I'm constantly asked, told about how cool he is in interviews, which makes me wonder if I'm not very cool and everyone's just explaining how cool he is to me. So I kind of try and play it down. But he is cool. He is what you see on the pitch. He doesn't seem to get out of second gear, but he's one step ahead of everybody at the same time. He's cultured. He has a glass of red wine. He loves his Italian food. What more? He is a cool man. He is much cooler than me.
I strike dead balls a la Pirlo. Each shot bears my name and they're all my children.
I read that as well, actually.
I've got to ask you, Chinese Super League, Your former teammates Demba Ba and Ramirez are there. It's really exploded over the past 2 months. Do you look at the Chinese Super League and think, road not taken?
No, not at all, no. My road is my road. I played a long time in the Premier League. I'm very sort of blessed with the fact that I could go that far, and this is certainly the option I wanted to come to New York. It's a road that will work for certain people, certain players. There are obviously monetary reasons. You know, the economics of it are very good for players. How big the league will carry on being, how much it will grow, I think the MLS has a very, very great growth and a stable growth. Great players here. It's a great place to live. Certainly not a road untaken for me.
Last question from one of our listeners, GFOP at Dan Dormer. Frank Lampard, what is more likely for your next career move? You're going to be Chelsea manager, NYCFC manager, or the next James Bond?
I can rule out one of those. Yeah.
Sorry, Chelsea fans. He's not coming.
Yeah, no, James Bond is out. If I'm going to be a manager, I would love the idea of being a Chelsea manager. It doesn't always work that way. I'm very fortunate. The clubs I've been at, I've loved playing for, loved the people. I have a great rapport with players. So either of those, if I was going to management, would be great for me.
Oh, Frank, we wish you and the rest of the guys at NYCFC well this season.
Yeah, thank you.
And by well, we mean bringing it to the Red Bulls.
Brilliant.
We really do.
We'll do our best.
Turn it all blue. Thanks, Frank.
Frank Lampard, thank courage. You. For our next guest, we travel to the footballing hotbed of the Pacific Northwest to speak to a 21-year-old striker poised to make a league debut for his hometown Seattle Sounders. He enters MLS as one of the most decorated amateurs in American soccer history. Where exactly have 9 US men's national team caps, a game-winning goal against Mexico, and an NCAA national championship gotten him? Living back home with mum and dad. We welcome to the pod the artist formerly known as Stanford Messi, Mr. Jordan Morris.
Hey guys, thank you for having me.
Oh, welcome back, Jordan. You've had some winter since we last spoke. You won with Stanford, you turned pro, and then you signed the richest homegrown contract of all time with your boyhood hometown heroes, the Seattle Sounders. Your life is currently in transition. So let's get the most important question out first. What's it like moving back home with mum and dad?
Yeah, it's interesting. It kind of feels like I'm in high school again, going back in time a little bit. But no, it's good to be back home with the family and, you know, see my brothers and my sister. And we just got a new dog, so just training that in my free time. But no, it's good to be back home.
Are you back in your childhood bedroom, Jordan? I imagine you in a single bed with a mobile and rocket ships above your head and a poster of Detlef Schrempf or Edgar Martinez on the wall.
Yeah, I am back in the childhood bedroom, and I had to actually just spent the last few days cleaning out a lot of that old stuff, that Mariners, Ken Griffey Jr., all that stuff.
Does playing in your hometown, does it make it easier or more difficult to stay grounded? Are you walking around Seattle, a soccer mad town if there ever was one in this country, and get recognized for selfies every 5 minutes?
People will stop me here or there to take a picture and just to say hey and say welcome back to Seattle, which is great. But it's just exciting, honestly. It's exciting to be back home and be in a familiar place and be able to play in the game a couple days ago. And my whole family was there. You know, my friends were there. So it's really exciting to be back home.
Yeah, I mean, you played in the CONCACAF Champions League against Club America from Liga MX. How many ticket requests are you getting from friends and family? When I speak to NFL players, when they play at home, they get anything from 50 to 100 requests for tickets.
You know, my friends and my family have been good about not really bombarding me with requests. You know, they talk to my mom, and she lets me know who might want to come to the game, and we try it. We're going to try and space it out throughout the season to hopefully get everyone that wants to come to a game. But it's just exciting to have that many people want to come watch you.
You've got to go the Carly Lloyd route and just ban friends and family, be hardcore about it all. Let's rewind a little bit, Jordan. I mean, before you signed with Seattle and MLS, you went and trained with Werder Bremen of Germany's Bundesliga, but then returned to our shores and signed to the domestic league. What made you give up the chance of playing abroad in an elite European league and plumb to stay in our loving arms in the United States?
You know, I went over there and I wanted to test it out just to get that experience. And if I went over there and absolutely loved it, then I would have wanted to stay. And it was a super cool experience. It's a great club and a great city, and the fans were awesome. And it was just, it was cool to get over there and experience that kind of level, experience the Bundesliga a little bit. But when I was over there, I just followed my heart, and it told me to come home. And, you know, before going over there, I was leaning towards Seattle, but went over there with an open mind and realized when I was over there that where I felt like would be best for me is to come home. And I felt like I could really develop here, you know, in the comfortable environment of being back home and playing with guys that I played with before, and you know, getting the chance to play for your hometown club is pretty special. So I think all those things kind of just drew me back to Seattle.
It's not just your hometown club. Your father, dad to you, Dr. Michael Morris to the Sounders, where he's the chief medical officer and has been since 2009, the club's first MLS season. It means you have family at home. You also have family in the workplace. I spoke to Landon Donovan just before he retired, and he talked a lot about how hard it was for him to move from California to Bayer Leverkusen. He did it at age 17. He talked about what it was like to go from being the man in America to being a small fish in a big pond, or der Tuchel, as they say over there. Did that go through your mind when you were there, Jordan?
Yeah, a little bit. I think it's definitely a tougher environment. Like you said, you're kind of a little fish in a big pond over there. And I think that can be very good for development. It just kind of depends on the player. And for me, I felt like that would be tough. When I kind of used Landon's career as an inspiration, just seeing how, you know, successful he was in the MLS. And, you know, he's arguably one of the best U.S. players of all time. And he did that, you know, the majority of time playing here in the MLS. So it was just exciting to kind of see that path and know that, you know, you can still succeed and still have a great career playing over here.
I mean, it's a complex decision, a complex dance. What advice, if any, did you get from national team coach Jurgen Klinsmann?
It was complex, and Jurgen had been great through the whole thing. You know, he definitely wanted me to go over and try it out and see how I felt over there. He really felt like that was important, and so I did that, and I'm really glad that I did go over there for those few weeks and to test it out and kind of test the waters. And then at the end of it all, you know, he was great. He said, you know, just do what you think is going to be best for you. And at that point, again, you know, I felt like that was to come back to Seattle. So, you know, throughout the whole process, he was really, you know, supportive. And he's just a good person for me to be able to talk to.
Was there ever a second in your mind when you traveled over there that Jordan Morris would play for Werder Bremen? Were you ever really in your mind going to go there?
I went over there with an open mind, but I didn't go over there saying, you know, I'm 100% signing for Seattle, because I think that would kind of defeat the purpose. And so I went over there with an open mind, and, you know, if I really, really, really fell in love with it, I think I would have thought. I just think, you know, off the field, it would have been tough for me to be over in Germany right now. Definitely more of a homebody.
As someone that spent far too much time in contract and negotiation classes, I admire the time you spent in Werder Bremen. You've signed a contract for a rookie. Was there one splurge you did immediately you signed? Is there a Lamborghini in the driveway right now at the Morris home?
No, nothing like that at all. No, I haven't really done anything like that, so I guess we'll have to wait and see. I'm going to be pretty conservative with that kind of stuff.
Look, I mean, your announcement, Seattle, led to some rejoicing, even by Sounder standards. The Sounders tweeted out a photo of you and five-time Ballon d'Or Lionel Messi in similar poses in front of the Seattle Space Needle. You've been playing at Stanford, average crowd, about 1,000. I mean, Seattle, there's a frenzied crowd, 44,247 average for every home game. You've just played your first game as a pro at Seattle Stadium. How did you experience it? Was it dizzying? Was it validating? Was it just bloody awesome?
It was awesome. You know, I was walking down the field when they were, you know, having the teams walk out and they were announcing the names, and I just got chills kind of looking around, because I'd gone to so many games as a fan, but to be on the field is just a different experience to look around. I mean, it's a big stadium, to just look around and see it filled, and it's so cool to see all the support here, and it's just exciting to transfer from being up in the stands to being on the field. It's a dream come true to play in that stadium in front of those fans.
It is a dream come true. I mean, it's a dream that comes with a lot of hype. There's a lot of focus on the size of the contract. Can you talk psychologically, mentally, the processes that you employ to tell yourself about how you're going to attack this season?
You know, there is a little bit of talk out there, and my approach has kind of been is just to try as best I can to push all that to the outside and just focus on people that matter, like the team and my family, and just really kind of keep all that internal and push all the stuff to the outside. I'm trying not to kind of read all the Twitter stuff and just pushing that away, and just really focusing on what I can do to make the biggest impact on the field that I can, you know.
Have you stopped reading press? Have you stopped reading social media?
Yeah, just tried to stop reading all that stuff just because I just don't think it's necessarily beneficial to playing on the field, you know, and it's very exciting to read positive stuff, but then there's some negative stuff out there that can kind of affect the way you think too, so.
Just wait till you're bald, Jordan.
Hopefully that doesn't happen anytime soon, but we'll see.
Oh, keep dreaming, Jordan. Keep dreaming. When you signed, the Sounders had a strike force of Clint Dempsey and Obafemi Martins. But then Obafemi decamped to the Chinese Super League. I mean, in the first scenario, the original scenario, your minutes would be managed, your integration calm. You could be slow, you could look, you could learn. Now, to a huge degree, you've got the added team pressure of having to deliver from day one. Does that expectation, does it make you gulp incredibly loudly and your eyes bulge? Because it would make.
You know, no, not really. I think it's very exciting, to be honest. And, you know, if Obafemi had stayed, I would have been, you know, excited to work hard and try and earn my minutes on the field and learn from him. But, you know, he ended up leaving, and there's still two great forwards here with Valdez and Quinn. I'm really excited to learn from them. And if I continue to get the chance to play, I think that's kind of what everyone wants, is to get minutes on the field. And especially if he can start, that's just a huge honor. So my first game, I definitely was a little nervous and felt the nerves out there for the first 15, 20 minutes. But no, I'm excited to get that behind me and try and make an impact on the field this year as best I can.
You've been training with the Sounders. You've played in the CONCACAF Champions League. How would you describe the biggest difference you've noticed between MLS and the American college game?
You know, I still have to learn a few things to fit in. I think just the overall speed of play continues to get higher as you move up levels. You know, when I jumped from the college level to the national team, it was the same thing. Just the speed of play was higher. So just continuing to learn how to get the ball moving a little quicker, 1-2 touch, and looking to combine it in those ways. And then just kind of the physicality of the game is going to increase too. The MLS is a very, you know, physical league. So just continue to work on, you know, that hold-up play that's important for forwards. But like I said, I'm excited to learn from guys like Valdez and Quinton, see how they play in games, and just kind of try to translate some of the things that they're good at into my game, hopefully.
Oh, I've been playing your game. I've been playing a lot on FIFA in the past couple of weeks, Jordan. Partly because... I still hold out at the age of 45 that my professional dreams are not dead. You are 21, and in my dreams about going pro, one of the most beautiful parts is me as a pro playing myself within the EA Sports FIFA game. I've got to ask you, what's it like being Jordan Morris playing with digital you, Jordan?
You know, a few months back, when I made my debut with the national team, they put me in the game for a month or so, and I played myself when I was at school with my buddies, and it's pretty surreal to see yourself out there and see the name on the jersey. And I don't know, that's definitely something that you kind of dream about when you're a kid. You're like, okay, if I get the chance to play, you know, professional soccer, then I'll get a chance to play it myself in a video game. So the first time I did it, it was pretty cool just kind of seeing that dream realized.
I've played as Jordan Morris a lot, and I hope to continue to do so in a remarkable fashion. I mean, to some degree, Jordan, you've played a career in reverse order to me as an English bloke. You've not yet played a league club game, but you've already pulled on an international jersey. You've even scored against the US's great rivals, Mexico. Kind of fairy tale that could only happen in this great country, America. But now you're a club player on the brink of your first season. Which US player's career do you look at as a model for how you want your own career, Jordan Morris's, to develop?
There's a few. Like I said, I was looking at Landon Donovan's career as an inspiration for coming back home, because he had such a successful career playing in the MLS. You know, he had stints over in Europe, but the majority of the time was in the MLS, and he had an amazing career. So looking at him, and then, you know, I love to look at Josie. Whenever I go into camp, Josie's just great with me both on and off the field, and obviously doing very well for himself. So looking at him and trying to learn from him and pick up little things that I can do better that he does great. I think those two guys, and then obviously Clint, you know, being on the same team as him.
What have you learned from Clint, Jordan?
I mean, he's just such a, what's the right word, just a tenacious player, I guess. He's always going for it, you know. He scored a goal against Club America, and then right after the kickoff, you know, he's right back looking for another goal. I think that's just his attitude, is he's always going to keep wanting to score. And that's something that I think you got to learn. You score one, and right after kickoff, you're looking to go score another. And I think that's what makes him such a good player and such a prolific goal scorer, is he's always looking to score. He just has a nose for goal. I think that's something that you can learn.
Your season kicks off this Sunday against Sporting Kansas City. You've supported the Sounders since you were a kid. You're now about to pull on the rave green yourself. A boyhood dream fulfilled. I have secured none of my boyhood dreams, Jordan, to be candid. You've got to describe for us. What are your emotions? Are you nervous? Are you exhilarated? Are you clinically confident?
I mean, I'm a little nervous, but I'm just excited to get a chance to play in front of those fans again. And, you know, for the first real MLS game, it's, like you said, it's something I've dreamed about for a while. You know, I was at the opening game when the Sounders joined the MLS, and ever since that day, I thought I want to play on this field. So it's going to be exciting now, I don't know how many, 6 years later, being able to step on the field and, you know, for that opening kick and be a member of the team and just try and represent the team, represent the city as best I can. It's a pretty surreal feeling.
Last question, Jordan. What goal are you setting for yourself this season? What is success for Jordan Morris?
I think as a team, the MLS Cup hasn't come back to Seattle yet, so I think that, you know, we know that, and I think as a team that's our goal. And then for me, I just, you know, if I get a chance to continue to start, just really trying to make an impact best way I can, and, you know, I hopefully can put a few balls in the back of the net this year and just really be a, you know, hopefully make an impact in a positive way for the team, and just always work hard and just try and be a spark, and hopefully help the team, you know, win some championships this year. So it's going to be exciting.
Oh, I've got to say, I'm quite excited, Jordan. On behalf of all of those with dismally shattered boyhood dreams and all those who love football and its growth in America, we wish you, Jordan Morris, and the entire city of Seattle a season of magic. Everyone that is, apart from the Portland fans.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Our final guest is the head coach of your defending MLS Cup champion, Portland Timbers. His career winning percentage, 57.8, is among the league's best for active coaches. We welcome to the pod a man who went from the head coach of the University of Akron Zips to Pep Guardiola's arch nemesis in 2 short years, calling us from one of America's truly great footballing cities, Portland, Mr. Caleb Porter.
Thanks for having me on. This is truly a highlight. I think it's even better than winning the MLS Cup. This is being on Men in Blazers.
Oh, to be with you, Caleb Porter, an inspiration as a young man. You just turned 41, but in your short career, you've already coached a team to MLS Cup glory. What more can one achieve in a life now you've succeeded in doing that?
Yeah, it was a great achievement, but I'm trying not to think about it anymore. It's a new season, and, you know, I'm really happy for the community. I was happy for the club. It was a monumental occasion. We'll have a banner that's dropped, and, you know, at the opening game. That'll be a nice moment, and, you know, we'll get our rings, but all anybody cares about now is what we're going to do this next year. So I'm trying to forget. Quit talking about what I won last year, Roger.
I do want to talk about it because it was such a joyous day, and I was fascinated by your response in the aftermath. You won back in December. You beat Columbus Crew in Columbus, And immediately in the aftermath, you said, I don't think it's fully sunk in completely. Good teams are so locked in, laser focused that there's a next game. How long did it take to sink in, Caleb, that you were the champions?
You know, there are times where I think it still sinks in. But it's, like I said, it's on in the next year. So I'm really focused on, you know, the present and this new team. But, you know, I do catch myself, you know, having to remind myself that we actually kind of did it. And I think that is the mindset that you want, you know, in your players. And I need that mindset as well. If we want to keep doing it, you have to stay present and you have to stay locked in on the process. And that's very much the mindset that our group had at that end of the year. We were really focused and businesslike, very methodical. In the playoffs, you know, you could tell right away we weren't just happy to be in it. We believed we could win it. And all the way till that last game, we were very confident that we were going to do it. At the end of the game, it was mayhem, you know, and then now you do. The next morning, I woke up and I had to remind myself we did it. I had to remind myself there's no next game. And now I have to remind myself, you know, there's another season and people want us to do it again.
How did you celebrate? When I want to mark some great occasion, I'll allow myself to go and buy a pair of blue suede shoes.
You know, I've won a couple of national championships, and I look back on them. I never celebrated them, you know, and I've learned in coaching, certainly being a pro coach, that you need to enjoy the wins and you need to enjoy certainly winning a trophy like MLS Cup. That next 3 weeks was amazing. You know, we had obviously the airport arrival, thousands of fans in the airport. We had the parade, which was unbelievable in the streets of Portland. They had a rally. And then I went on holiday and took it all in. My dad used to always tell me, take time to smell the roses. And for the first time in my life, I really did enjoy it and smell the roses a little bit.
Did you buy yourself anything to mark the occasion?
I did not. I haven't, no. But my wife bought a lot. she bought a lot.
Few cities are as soccer mad as Portland. For those who have not had the pleasure, a particular pleasure, a wonderful pleasure of being there, Portland to me, it's like a slice of the American future lived in the present. I imagine, Caleb Porter, that you have not had to buy yourself too many drinks or shots recently. What's it been like walking the streets of Portland in the aftermath of the win?
Well, I'm not doing too many shots these days, but, you know, a coffee here or there. It's really a cool city. And when you go downtown, it's nice to get recognized. I live in a little community 20 minutes outside of Portland, Lake Oswego, and people are really respectful there. It's a great community for my kids and really quiet place to live. But it is nice to be in a community where you've done something that's meaningful. You know, there are some cities where you'd win MLS Cup and, you know, no one would care. No one would know it even. And you certainly wouldn't get recognized and you wouldn't get respected and appreciated. You wouldn't get a parade like we got. And I feel fortunate to lead a club where it's really meaningful and relevant.
It's fascinating, this new professional challenge for you, defending a title in the pro game. Whose counsel have you sought to get insight and ensure you've got your own preparation right?
You know, I worked in a program at Indiana University that had won multiple national championships, and I was a player in that program and I was a part of that culture and I coached in that program. And you know, my mentor Jerry Yeagley, you know, he won 8 national championships. You know, it's similar to John Wooden of basketball. And you know, so I have a lot of experience in, you know, kind of dynasty programs. And then I took that blueprint to Akron and built that program there. So I do understand the psychology of repeating, and it's pretty simple. You don't assume last year because you won it, it's going to be any easier, but you also don't assume it's going to be harder either. A lot of media will say it's harder, and I don't believe that. I think it's a good thing. You have that experience. You know you can do it, and you know what's possible at the end of the road. But if you have a good culture, a winning culture, and if you follow a process, you look at the New England Patriots, you look at, you know, San Antonio Spurs, you look at Duke basketball, you look at Manchester United when Alex Ferguson was there, you look at Barcelona, you know, there's a lot of continuity, there's a lot of consistency, and there's an identity. And, you know, we want continuity and identity here in this club as well.
Can you talk more about it? Because when I think about your management style, your philosophy, I mean, you're a very detailed manager. You have an emphasis on the psychology and working out how to summon motivation for every individual player. One of my favorite quotes of yours, you said, "Winning is like a drug. You want it again, ... or ice cream." I love the PG reference that you tacked on the end in near panic. How would these individuals, I mean, players can tune out coaches. What do you do to make sure they maintain motivation and don't become complacent?
That's a great question. You know, I'm coming up on 4 years as a pro coach, and you know, I've thought about it before. You know, I've had to talk to my team over 100 times before games, and you know, over nearly 1,000 times for training and video sessions. And I think what I've learned, and I've been a player, but what I've learned as a coach is players really like a rhythm and they like consistency. And if you're consistent and clear and concise, they like that a lot better than if you're a really interesting guy that just is confusing to them. And so in some ways, if I'm boring, they like that, you know. So I'm very passionate. I'm very intense around the games. But in training, I'm really kind of normal, routine, business-like, methodical, and probably pretty boring. But I think players like that. They don't want some guy to come in and just rock the boat every day. And that, I think, gets a little bit annoying to players. So I try to be pretty business-like all week and normal.
Beige coaching is winning coaching, Caleb. I mean, you came through to the pros. You were immediately hailed as the American Guardiola for your possession obsession. Last season, that changed. You became more pragmatic. You talked about how you'd been studying Chelsea. You went to watch them train so you could examine how they won the Premier League up close. Who are you looking at now as your model to retain the trophy?
Well, what's interesting is I think a lot of what Chelsea was doing is now becoming more and more what every club is doing, because the game is moving in a direction where you have to have a multifaceted approach. You know, Bayern was talking about that a little bit in the hiring of Ancelotti, in that he's a balanced coach. He's very tactically flexible, and he has a multifaceted style of play. And so I think that's the way the game's going. You have to be able to keep the ball. That's an important thing, but sometimes not keeping the ball is the best tactic, and being able to play on the counter is even better than keeping the ball up the pitch. So this idea of, you know, dominating a game like Barcelona, in the way the game's being played right now, when you do that, you open yourself up for the counterattack. With our team last year, we were extremely tactically flexible. We played 4-3-3, 4-2-3-1, 4-4-2 at times. Sometimes we pressed high, sometimes we dropped off, sometimes we played direct, sometimes we played possession, sometimes we attacked the flanks, sometimes we attacked narrow. We were really well-rounded and tactically flexible, and we're really humble. You know, our guys go into a game and they know, okay, we need to do this to win because the other team's better, and we can't have the ball. You know, we're humble knowing that, and I think that's what makes us a good team.
Season is about to kick off this weekend. Who do you assess as your rivals, Caleb?
Everyone. I think everyone's our rival, but certainly Seattle. Seattle's our biggest rival. Those games are, you can't even believe how intense those games are. You remember the game last year where we beat them in the Open Cup at Starfire. It was the first game they had lost in the Open Cup on that field, and I think it was 10 years. And they had the issue with the red card and Dempsey. And I really thought that kind of jump-started our season. And in some ways, that you know, probably somewhat derailed a little bit there. So I always find those games are crazy. I mean, there's a lot of respect between the players and between, you know, me and Siggy. But when the whistle blows, neither one of us want to lose, because our fans, our supporters, absolutely hate losing to each other.
I've got to ask you about the Los Angeles Galaxy. Incredible influx of talent over the offseason. De Jong, Ashley Cole, Jelly Van Dam, alongside Stevie G and Dos Santos. Do you open up your newspaper, look at each arrival, and gulp slightly?
I mean, it has to be the best team ever put together, assembled on paper in the league history. It's unbelievable. You know, I don't know how they do it. The question is, can they get the chemistry? But again, that goes back to to us being humble. You know, we need to understand we're going to play teams that have more talent than us, and we can win games against LA like we did last year when they had a really good team and we beat them 5-2, scored 5 goals in the second half. That was on the road. We've made really talented teams, you know, look vulnerable because we have a good spirit, we have a good organization, and we're very hardworking. And, you know, like I said, we're tactically flexible, and I think that makes us unpredictable and hard to game plan for.
Last question for you from one of our listeners, this one from at Merritt Paulson. Ask Caleb.
Oh, man.
Ask Caleb.
This could be interesting.
If it's true that Merritt Paulson is a real tactical brains on the tactical side in Portland, it was only when Merritt Paulson's training sessions were adopted that the club started winning.
He had to put you up to that one.
Just a question.
Yeah,
just from the listener.
You found out our secret, weapon. In fact, Merritt, he puts a mic in my ear.
Yeah.
And during the game, he actually gives me all the tactics. And every week, he scribbles the lineup on a napkin. To be fair, Merritt, he knows enough to be dangerous. He's he's learned a lot, you know, over the years. But you know, he like all owners, they think they know more than they do. Oh, I'll just say that.
I think you've just given him, irrespective, the title of his forthcoming multi-volume autobiography, "I Know Enough to Be Dangerous" by Merritt Paulson. Caleb,
exactly.
We hope that you and Merritt, what you are building there and the ebullience around it, that fan base, to attend a Portland Timbers home game, for me, in America, is up there. We're going to see Dortmund in Germany or Crystal Palace in their pomp in the Premier League. It's a fantastic culture that you are building and presiding over. We wish you and the rest of your Timbers army, especially our mate Timber Joey, all the best as you look to defend the title in the season ahead.
Thanks, Roger. I really appreciate you having me on. And I do have to say, you know, after we didn't make the playoffs in 2014, we did an event together in Vancouver. And you know, if you remember, we sat at the bar and you kept telling me you need to play Darlington Nagbe in the middle of the park. And that was kind of the move we made that had us win 9 games. So I guess I finally listened to you and it paid off.
You didn't listen to me quickly enough, but I was very glad. Very glad to
exactly.
You did. Caleb, we will see you this season. We'll speak again. Thank you.
Take care, Roger.
3 great gents, 3 fascinating stories, the truth of which will play out week by week over the course of the season. It all starts this Sunday. Caleb and the Timbers host Columbus Crew in a rematch of last year's MLS Cup final. Oh, that game is 4:30 Eastern time on ESPN. Then 7 p.m. Eastern time, Jordan Morris and the Seattle Sounders take on Mighty Sport in Kansas City in Seattle. That game is on Fox Sports 1. Oh, Stoner and Alexi. Before it all, Frank and NYCFC will have travelled to Chicago for a 2 p.m. Eastern time kickoff. That game is on MLS Direct Kick and the YES Network. Godspeed, MLS, and to all who sail in her.